Hello, and in this episode, I want to share with you the views of an individual, Plato, who stands with Socrates and Aristotle as one of the shapers of the whole intellectual tradition in the West, a true giant. He was an Athenian in Greece. He was born in 427 BC, so that's 2,500 years ago. He wrote some many famous works, The Republic, and the last work he wrote was called The Laws. Here we go. This is the book, The Laws by Plato. And I just wanted to share with you a passage entitled How to Discourage Unnatural Sexual Intercourse. It's a very controversial subject, but I believe it does have relevance to today's discussions between Muslims and Christians and secularists about homosexuality and lesbianism, and how to, and the rules pertaining thereof. All of Plato's works are in the form of dialogues, conversations between mostly between Socrates, who was a teacher of Plato, and various other Athenians who are usually not particularly don't have a particular role in the dialogues, other than say yes, no, yes, you're wonderful, Socrates. In this last work by Plato, Plato's own role is taken by the Athenian, it's called. He's just an anonymous stranger, and he is talking to various people, in this case, Megalus. So this is a fictional drama. It's about the laws are about a utopian society called Magnesia that Plato believes should be brought into reality, a serious political program with laws and regulations and a way of life and economics and so on. This has been hugely influential down through the centuries. And this one particular chapter here on homosexuality I want to share with you, and I'll just make a few comments perhaps en route. So the Athenian, as I say, is Plato in this dialogue. And Megalus is some Spartan dude who doesn't really have much to say other than yes, no, aren't you wonderful? So I'll just call the Athenian Plato. Plato says, "I want to put the law on this subject on a firm footing. At the moment, I'm thinking of a method which is, in a sense, simplicity itself. But from another point of view, nothing could be harder." Megalus, "What are you getting at?" Plato. "We're aware, of course, that even nowadays, most men, in spite of their general disregard for the law, are very effectively prevented from having relations with people they find attractive. And they don't refrain reluctantly either. They're more than happy to." Megalus, "What circumstances have you in mind?" Plato, "When it's one's brother or sister whom one finds attractive. And the same law, unwritten though it is extremely effective in stopping a man sleeping, secretly or otherwise, with his son or daughter, or making any kind of amorous approach to them. Most people feel not the faintest desire for such intercourse." Megalus, "That's perfectly true." Plato, "So the desire for this sort of pleasure is stifled by a few words." Megalus, "What words do you mean?" Plato, "The doctrine that these acts are absolutely unholy, an abomination in the sight of the gods, and that nothing is more revolting. We refrain from them because we never hear them spoken of in any other way. From the day of our birth, each of us encounters a complete unanimity of opinion wherever we go. We find it not only in comedies, but often in the high seriousness of tragedy too, when we see Thyestes on the stage, or an Oedipus, or Macaris, the clandestine lover of his sister. Watch these characters dying promptly by their own hand as a penalty for their crimes." Megalus, "You're right in this, anyway, that when no one ventures to challenge the law, public opinion works wonders." Plato, "So we are justified in what we said just now. When the legislator wants to tame one of the desires that dominate mankind so cruelly, it's easy for him to see his method of attack. He must try to make everyone, slave, free, women and children, and the entire state without any exception, believe that this common opinion has the backing of religion. He couldn't put his law on a securer foundation than that." Megalus, "Very true. But how on earth will it ever be possible to produce such spontaneous unanimity?" Athenian, Plato, I'm glad you've taken me up on this point. This is just what I had been getting at when I said I knew of a way to put into effect this law of ours, which permits the sexual act only for its natural purpose, procreation, and forbids not only homosexual relations, in which the human race is deliberately murdered, but also the sowing of seeds on rocks and stone, where it would never take root and mature into a new individual. And we should also have to keep away from any female soil in which we'd be sorry to have the seed develop. I presume that means there any undesirable woman who wouldn't be a good vehicle for female procreation of a new human being. At present, however, the law is effective only against intercourse between parent and child. But if it can be put on a permanent footing and made to apply effectively as it deserves to in other cases as well, it'll do a power of good. The first point in its favour is that it is natural law. And then he continues to talk about how to establish the law, the importance of self-control and so on. But I just wanted to mention a couple of things here. That Plato recognises the importance of founding the law on religion, and also that the soul needs to be moulded according to the dictates of natural law, of the religion, so that it will believe and act appropriately and without any doubt. It's not enough just to have a remote abstract law. You've got to have a religion which is based on the gods, as he would call them, on the divine, to really convince a person in their heart that what they are doing is the will of the divine and not just a man-made law. So the centrality of religion in getting uniformity of belief and behaviour in a society, agreement on a common code, is absolutely foundational here. The second point is that in ancient Greece, ancient Athens, the acceptability of homosexuality is well known. In fact, there are early dialogues of Plato, the Symposium, for example, which seems to praise same-sex, not just love, but same-sex physical acts, although they are transcended in some kind of divine a higher purpose. But nevertheless, they're not condemned. So at the very end of his life, Plato seems to have changed his mind and to come down very clearly on what we would call a very traditional understanding of sexual morality that restricts sexual acts just to heterosexual marriage alone in holy matrimony. So Plato's views here are, of course, very compatible with that of the Abrahamic faiths, Orthodox Judaism, traditional Christianity, and Islam. For the same reasons that the divine has prohibited these acts and that men for their own good need to obey this and that these particular acts are not just wrong, but they're an abomination in the sight of the gods. And the word abomination reminds me of the usual English translation Leviticus, Levitical laws, which also call these acts an abomination. And of course, that is in Israel. Purportedly laws going back much earlier, perhaps 1,000 years more earlier than Plato's writings. So I think the lesson here is that, for me anyway, our desires have to be in conformity with the divine will. And the only way to effectively obey laws when they go against our desires is to have a religious foundation for them. It's not just enough to have Parliament or Congress pass a law and everyone goes, oh, right, well, we're now going to live by that. It needs to have the sanction, the authority of God behind it to convince the soul of the truth of it rather than just a man-made law. And also that the traditional Christian and the Islamic prohibition on these acts is not some kind of alien thing to the West now, because now the West, of course, not just approves of these, but requires that we all approve of them publicly or we will be punished, even through social disapproval or even through criminal sanction. But here, right at the beginning of Western civilization itself, in the works of its greatest philosopher, we have a very clear statement of principle and of law and of divine sanction, which is completely compatible with those Abrahamic faiths. And I think it's important we don't forget that in our politically correct world, that in fact the views we have today on this subject are very, very recent. They don't go back beyond, say, the 1960s, in Britain anyway. And they have their roots in ancient Greek philosophy, in Plato's Laws. So this is actually a surprisingly interesting book. It's usually seen as his most difficult work. I'm not sure why. It seems pretty straightforward. But I do recommend it if you are interested in Greek philosophy and a different way of looking at the world from the prevailing and rather tedious and oppressive secularism that we're all required to sign up to today. Till next time.